There will be no personal nor direct attacks on anyone. And I would ask that you please try to keep down the loud cheering and the clapping. There will be no booing and no unruly behavior. With that,
this is painful, and it will be for a long time.
Donald Trump, baby! That's right, this man knows what's up!
After all, these are a couple of high-stepping turkeys, and you know what to say about a high-stepper. No step too high for a high-stepper.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Well, Sean's a tough guy. I mean, I think everybody knows that. You know, Sean, he took some licks. He hangs in there.
Yeah, what's wrong with the beer we got? I mean, the beer we got drank pretty good, don't it?
Did you hear what I said?
So this is a brave council. I had no doubt about them.
That doesn't suck.
If you don't like it, too bad.
Last question. Were you high on drugs?
Last question. Kiss my...
And welcome to Midday Mobile here on FM Talk 106.5. Jeff Porfilly and for Sean Sullivan. Sean Sullivan away today. Hope he is doing well. Lots to talk about today. Just to give you a preview of the program, State Senator Chris Elliott will be with us at the bottom of the hour. And in the second hour, we'll hear from a friend of mine. I'm also a radio host up in Huntsville, by the way, WVNN. And I will be on today from 2 to 5. So I'll play a long day today. But my friend from Huntsville, former Congressman Parker Griffith, will be with us in the second hour. We'll talk what's going on here. Maybe get a little more into what happened last Tuesday, what it means for the state now that it's had some time to marinate, and kind of the changing. I think there's a lot of changes going on in Alabama, at least in Republican politics. Democrat politics, roughly the same. They have a new party infrastructure and a lot of things going on there. But we'll talk about those wholesale changes, the trends that I think are going on here in just a few minutes. Something I wanted to bring up right away, John Lewis, congressman from Georgia, passing away over the weekend. Our thoughts and prayers go out to him and his family and his friends and his colleagues in the United States Congress. But, you know, he's known for his endeavors in the civil rights movement. The Bloody Sunday March, he was a participant where you had the effort to get the Selma to Montgomery March underway, but it was thwarted by Alabama state troopers at the time. It just was really the first time we had some really graphic images, and they went up on the national airwaves, and people got a dose of the racial strife in Alabama at the time. And the politics changed right then and there. It was this cruelty, and it was seen as being very, very, very important in the civil rights era back then. So fast forward to 2020, the death of John Lewis has some false thinking. Maybe we need to rename the Edmund Pettus Bridge in Selma. So the Edmund Pettus Bridge is, if you go down Highway 80, it's the main route between Selma and Montgomery. And there's a bridge crossing the Alabama River going into downtown Selma right there. And that bridge was where the Bloody Sunday March was thwarted. That's where the state troopers did what they did. And it's seen as kind of a landmark, if you will. And every anniversary of that day, they reenact the march. They reenact the march, and it's always a big political event. If it's a presidential year, you'll see all kinds of presidential candidates there. Everybody wants to get their picture made. I've been there to see Barack Obama do it. I've been there to see Bill Clinton do it, Hillary Clinton do it. These last few times, Kamala Harris, Cory Booker, Joe Biden has been there. It's one of these things you do as a Democrat. It's a image of you crossing the bridge. It shows solidarity. Anyway, the Edmund Pettus, the namesake for the bridge, was a Confederate general, and he was a Klansman. Well, that seems weird, right? Having that historic structure and letting it remain named Edmund Pettus. But there's something to that. If you talk to some of the local activists, I've been to this march several times. they like the idea. The people that are there every single year, and you know the people, they are there every year. It is there is the city of Selma's biggest event. They like the idea of taking it to a former Klansman walking over, marching over a bridge named for him. It's a show of indignation. And there's always been this reluctance to rename the bridge in honor of John Lewis. That's the big push right now, especially on the heels of his death. Let's rename the Edmund Pettus Bridge for John Lewis. And nationally, it is being portrayed as, well, those racist rednecks in Alabama don't want to let go of the Confederacy. They won't rename that bridge. They ought to rename that bridge. And that's not the case at all. Now, Terry Sewell's gone back. She's the congresswoman for the 7th Congressional District. She's gone back and forth on this. I would argue this. Keep it the Edmund Pettus Bridge. It's an old bridge built in 1940. Steel truss. It is a rickety old bridge. It goes into downtown Selma. It's the major thoroughfare in and out of town. There's a bypass that they built, I guess, 20, 30 years ago, going around Selma that most of the traffic heading down Highway 80 on to Mississippi uses. But if you're going in and out of Selma to Montgomery or Lowndes County, that's the way you go. You go over the Edmund Pettus Bridge. It's still in use today. Close it and make it for foot traffic only. Build a brand new bridge south of town somewhere. Downtown Selma is going to need a new bridge. Call that the John Lewis Bridge. But here's what you do. You make it a big, nice bridge. Make it inclusive, big and wide. And now you have what I think is, you know, since we're so in love with symbolism in 2020, you have the Edmund Pettus Bridge, this rickety old bridge. Then you have this big, nice bridge, the John Lewis Bridge. And compare the eras. Do you want to be in the 1940s mindset? Or do you want to be in the 2020s mindset? It would be very instructive to do so. You can do whatever you wanted to. There's any number of things you could do to this new bridge. But it's going to need to be built, a new bridge, at some point, to get over the Alabama River from one side to the other. But the national media doesn't really, they fail to see this nuance. They fail to understand. I would say a lot of these people in the national media have never been to Selma, Alabama, if they've ever even been to Alabama. But Selma's not one of these places you go to, particularly if you're from Mobile. It's just kind of on the way to some places if you live in certain parts of the state. But typically, it's not a, you know, it's not like you're passing through Montgomery or passing through Mobile. It's not on a major highway. It's kind of off the beaten path. But it's a place I would dare say many of these people have never been to and don't understand. The only time people go to Selma, and I've been to Selma on the Bloody Sunday weekend, and I've been to Selma dozens and dozens of times when it wasn't that. And the locals there will tell you, well, the only time that people seem to care about Selma, Alabama is that weekend, and then you never hear a peep from anybody after that. That's the problem. I mean, if you want to see something instructive about how much Democratic politics actually cares and how it's just kind of surface, you know, doesn't go much deeper than the surface, look at this Selma situation. Every presidential candidate comes in and out of Selma on that weekend. Never, hardly ever any other weekend. And it's a very economically beleaguered place. If you've been there, it's had some hard times. It's struggled. It hasn't thrived like a lot of places in this state. The only time Democrats seem to care about it is one weekend a year, one Sunday a year. And that's when they go get their picture made when they're running for president. If it's not a presidential cycle, they're not even there for the march. Nonetheless, I think if you want to make a statement and you want to do something like that, you got to maintain the Edmund Pettus Bridge and make it a historic structure. And that's the way you approach this. There's a way to do this. All right, guys, we got to take a timeout. We'll be right back. This is Midday Mobile at FM Talk 106.5.
listening to Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
And welcome back to Midday Mobile at FM Talk 106.5. Jeff Poore sitting in for Sean Sullivan. Got something on your mind, 251-343-0106. That's the call-in line and the text line, I believe. Some other things going on. COVID-19 continues to dominate the news. Over the weekend, Lieutenant Governor Will Ainsworth, he's been very, very outspoken about the whole mask ordinances and any effort from a top-down state perspective. Governor Ivey instituting a mask ordinance statewide kind of came out of the blue. No one really saw it coming. But Governor Ainsworth, speaking to a Republican men's club up in Huntsville on Saturday, they do these things via Zoom now, said that he's worried about the possibility, the prospect of this happening. If they're going to mandate a mask, they're going to make you wear a mask right now, and it's a mandate, what happens when we get a vaccination, a vaccine? Are they going to mandate that as well? And it's his opinion that this is a slippery slope to that, that a vaccine is the logical destination of where we're headed, that they're going to tell everybody you have to go out and get a vaccine. And that may very well be the wisest thing to do. Get the vaccine and kind of end this madness. Get everybody on board. But do we need to make it mandatory? There's going to be people that are going to object to a mandated vaccine. Now, look, I get it that there are vaccination laws in order for you to send your children to school or whatever that might be. But that's a choice. There are ways around that. To attend public schools, you have to have certain vaccinations. Okay, fine. If you don't want to send your kids to public school, well, you'll have to send them to private school. I mean, there's ways around this. But that's going to be a big fight. Whether you agree or disagree with vaccinations and mandatory vaccinations, that's going to be the big next big fight, I think, at least on the state level. That the state of Alabama will mandate this. They will mandate this, and they'll tell people they got to do this. And then that is, that in some ways is not exactly the kind of government we elect in Alabama. It's a conservative state. We elect these Republicans. We're anticipating they are going to govern with a conservative governing philosophy. I gotta be honest, guys, and I know Mobile has a bad taste in its mouth because of KIV and the toll bridge, but the gas tax, prison construction, teacher pay rate, those aren't hallmarks of a Republican administration. Those are hallmarks of a Democrat administration. And we're taking this approach of these big government solutions, and instead of taking that and what's the alternative? That's debatable. People seem to want less government. That's what they vote for, but they're not getting that. They get that every 4 years in a campaign. That's what people run on. But, you know, it doesn't seem to be happening like it ought to. I think this last election was a show of that, right? Tommy Tuberville beats longtime U.S. Senator Jeff Sessions, who turned attorney general, and everybody knew who he was, and people just wanted to change. And it's happened. It happened in AL2 with Barry Moore defeating Jeff Coleman. Jeff Coleman, not really a figure in government, but more of a figure in the business community, was chairman of the BCA. There's something going on in our electorate right now. I think it's going to show up at the state level in 2022. That's a ways, way out. We haven't even gotten past the 2020 election. But I think this vaccination question is going to set up for something big. With the toll bridge, we talked about it statewide, but it was really a South Alabama issue. And the gas tax, people were kind of okay with it. They said, look, we got to do something about our roads. They're rickety, they're old, and if the state wants to progress and be successful, we got to improve our infrastructure. Prisons, the DOJ is breathing down your neck. the Department of Justice in the prison situation says, hey, you're violating the Eighth Amendment. Get it together or we'll come in and we'll fix it for you and then we'll send you a bill. Okay. All those are fair game. But we start mandating vaccines. I mean, what is the straw that breaks the camel's back with a Republican administration under Kay Ivey? And in 2022, does that set up for something big, a big wave in state politics? We haven't had that. I mean, even with Bentley, that was kind of something out of left field when Alabama elected Bentley as governor. But there were a lot of other things going on in that Republican primary that maybe were separate from kind of the trend and the mood of the state at the time. But now people are already paying attention. And I think this Ainsworth stuff, for him to come out against it, maybe he's setting himself up to run for governor. It's unclear what will happen in 2022. And everybody's looking toward 2022 in state politics right now because you have the potential for Richard Shelby to be stepping aside and you have the potential for Kay Ivey to be stepping aside. It's going to make things wide, wide open. So you need to watch what these guys kind of waiting in the wings are up to. And I always watch a guy like Ainsworth because I think he could run for any of those offices. Those are very powerful, important offices, governor and U.S. senator. Who else is out there? So watch out. Well, you know, for Ainsworth to come out and start making it known that he's openly opposed, the lieutenant governor openly opposed to a governor in such a public manner. That is a clue right there, ladies and gentlemen. Some news just saw flash across the feed here. Some of you are familiar on this show with George Talbot. George Talbot working for Mayor Stimson. He's kind of the communications guy. He's the spokesman for the city. He's stepping aside, leaving his position. Last day will be August 14th. He's accepted a position as Director of Government Affairs with Volker Engineering here in Mobile. So that's an interesting story. George Talbot, known him for a long, long time. Back when he was the business guy at the Press Register that went on to do politics and now worked in the city of Mobile and is going to move on from there. So catching you up on that. One more thing before we take a time out and go to the bottom of the hour news. It's a COVID-19 update. 67,711 confirmed cases and 1,257 confirmed deaths. They say a total of, this is just a big number, 519,608 tested in the state. Those testing rates are going up. I think that has a lot to do with the numbers going up, and people will say, well, yeah, but we have to be for testing. It's the right thing to do. We need to know, and we need to track this virus, and that's fair enough. But when you put it side by side with these other countries, it's such an unfair statistic. You look up at the screen at a MSNBC or CNN, and they put it right up next to Germany or Japan or whatever. It just looks like the United States is just in the midst of a plague. Let's take a quick call real quick before we go to break. Who we got here?
Mr. Poore, it's Mike. How are you, sir?
Mike, how are you this afternoon?
Lovely. Just to break the monotony of the mask, COVID, we're all going to die. First of all, congratulations on the birth of your firstborn coming up. What a big deal. That's huge, and God bless you, and your life will never be the same. And second of all, what's up with the trash pandas? When are we going to see some baseball up in Huntsville?
You know, they've called off the major league season, so there's this brand new stadium there, right there off of 565 in Huntsville, and it's just kind of, I drive by it all the time, and it's just kind of a sad situation.
Well, what's your prognosis for attendance and things like that when baseball decides to finally roll around?
I think it's going to be big. Huntsville's much different than it was when they had the Huntsville Stars there. It's a different city. It's more, it is a younger vibe going on there. I think it's going to do very, very well. And the park It's not like the old park in Huntsville. It is kind of more like what you see nationally. It's got the bars and all the entertainment venues and like a wave pool or something. And so it's more of a destination than just going to a baseball game.
And what are you pulling for, a young man or young lady, for your firstborn?
I'm leaving that up to God. I am going to be happy no matter what. Mike referring to we are expecting our first child, my wife and I, coming up in January. Hey, Mike, thanks for the call. We got to take a break. We'll be right back. This is FM Talk 106.5.
Is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
And welcome back to Midday Mobile at FM Talk 106.5. Jeff Poore filling in for Sean Sullivan today on Midday Mobile. Hope he is doing well. Still come on the program in the next hour, my friend from North Alabama. He's a former congressman, former Democratic congressman, Parker Griffith. We are going to kind of go over what had happened last Tuesday and some other things going on in Alabama politics right now, what's going on at the state level, and things of that. So make sure you stay tuned for that. But join us now, friend of mine. First time I've gotten to talk to him on this radio station. He's a regular guest of mine up in Huntsville, State Senator Chris Elliott. Senator, how are you today?
I'm doing great. It's a beautiful day in South Alabama.
That's all. It seems like that happens a lot. You have a lot of great days down here. Senator, I guess a lot going on. First off, I wanted to get you on, just kind of get an update. The local economy, we tend to focus on the national economy and the state economy, but the local economy in coastal Alabama is unique, as you well know, to what's going on in the rest of the state and the rest of the country. It's tourism, it's a lot of different other things combined, and the COVID-19 recovery. What are you hearing from your constituents? How are things going, getting back to some kind of modicum of normalcy?
Well, people are very excited that we are back open and running for the most part, and they are, as we all are, trying to figure out how to operate with the reality that is COVID-19. I will tell you, it was a very tough time down here when the governor and the state health officer have really shut us down. I mean, tourism, you say, is a big part. It's a $5.2 billion a year business in Baldwin County alone. And you think about different industries around the state, there are very few of them that are of that magnitude, and it's a big deal, not just for state and local coffers, but for our businesses here as well. That's why I was so pleased to serve on the Lieutenant Governor's task force to reopen Alabama and to do so safely. And that's what we're seeing here for the most part in South Alabama, is folks doing what they are supposed to do. And yes, wearing masks. They were doing that voluntarily before the governor's mask order for the most part, and seeing our tourists do the same thing. But that's what we've got to do is figure out a way to keep our economy going, to deal with this reality that is probably going to be a new reality for us for well over a year, and to keep our economy going while trying to stay safe at the same time.
What is the reaction to the mask ordinance and anything else the state is doing? Does that seem to be a hindrance? What are you hearing from your guys?
Well, listen, most of the folks I talk to question whether or not the mask is the best thing or not to do. There's conflicting science, really both ways. But I think most people have realized, look, if this might help, I'll do it. It's inconvenient. I only need to do it when I'm around other folks or can't socially distance properly. But most folks I see are doing it. I will say that, you know, the ones that are thinking about the constitutional implications and et cetera are really questioning a mask mandate. I look at mandates like this from the executive and wonder, look, if you know you can't enforce it, then why issue the order, right? General Stanley McChrystal had a great quote that said, never, ever issue an order that you know won't be followed. And that's exactly what I think is happened here, that you know, the governor stepped out there and said, y'all, you will do this. But then the next sentence said, but we're not going to really punish you, and I'm not encouraging anybody to punish you if you don't. You just have to wonder what the value is in that long term.
Well, and she even referenced Spanish Fort mayor the way the city of Spanish Fort was handling it is, if you get cited for not having the mask, they didn't cite you per se. They just told you it's important to wear a mask, and here's a mask, instead of a citation. Which I guess in some ways that's fine and all, but does it rise to the level of a mandate, the power of state government, which is an awesome power to use in such a way?
Well, and you got to ask, you know, did it need an order from the governor if that was how we were handling it anyway? That's how we're handling it in most of Baldwin County, at the beaches, et cetera. If you see somebody that's not socially distancing, is in a restaurant or they're in one of our businesses, you see businesses handing out a mask. You see law enforcement handing out a mask and asking them, please wear this. And by and large, most people are complying. I have not heard of a single issue of somebody here locally not doing what they're supposed to be doing. And that's because people understand that we've got to do everything we can do to keep this, to mitigate the spread. It's going to spread, but to keep the rate of spread down so that our hospitals can handle what they need to, so that people can get better, and so that by all means we can keep our economy open.
I mean, is it in some ways this, that yes, there's a spike underway, but it's not just Alabama. There's other states, most of the country. We need to look like we're doing something. We need to look as if we are being proactive and really engaged in this. Let's do something, but we don't want to take the extraordinary step of shutting the economy down. I know, let's do a mask ordinance. In some ways, maybe it is just a gesture of sorts to show that we're aware that we're doing something.
Well, and I think that folks were doing that on their own anyway. People want to protect themselves. They want to protect their customers, and they want to protect their coworkers. But I think by and large, folks were doing it already. I tend to agree with Governor Ainsworth on this one, and that is that this is really flexing that didn't need to happen from the executive, A, and B, isn't terribly effective either, and almost with an acknowledgement in the same announcement that it wasn't going to be effective. And I think that's probably more problematic than not. Again, the good news is most people are following the recommendations or settling in to the reality that this bug is going to be around for a while, and that we need to at least slow the rate of infection as much as possible, while also understanding that the likelihood is, you know, most of us are probably going to get this thing over time.
Yeah, and that's probably just got to work its way through and then on out, like a lot of these super bugs, or whatever you want to call them, have in the past. But let's move on to matters of the legislature. Budget hearings a couple of weeks ago. I guess this CARES Act money is still kind of it's been left to the governor, but the projections that you guys left Montgomery back in May, when you left, you had a set of projections and you based your budget on them, and that was based on the revenue and what you thought you were going to need. And do you think that those projections have held up for the most part to this point?
Well, what we heard in the budget hearings from Legislative Fiscal Office were that by and large the general fund projections were still good, and of course the general fund's made up of more stable revenue. The less stable revenue goes to the Education Trust Fund, and that is going to be a little bit more interesting. The good news is there's more room in the ETF, right? A bigger budget significantly, to absorb some of those valleys, if you will. Now the good news is that tourism is up again. Sales tax revenues in Baldwin County, those areas that really generate a lot for the ETF, are up again. And I think that we will see more after you see income tax filings. Of course, that was the 15th of this month. You see income tax filings come in, and those budget projections for the ETF can get solidified a little bit more. I think we'll see where we really are from an ETF standpoint. But the general fund looks good. Chairman Albritton, Greg Albritton, my counterpart and a good friend here in Baldwin County. He lives, of course, in Escambia County, represents part of Baldwin County as well. Did a great job with that budget, and I think we're on track to stay on budget in the general fund.
When you talk about the ETF and schools, what do you think of the prospects of schools being open to the fall? Obviously, there's a lot involved, and a lot at the state level. There are plans in place in Mobile County, obviously putting it off for a while, but other parts of the state, well, what is the buzz? What is the discussion there?
Well, the discussion I've been hearing is that we need to open our schools back up, and I'm incredibly proud in Baldwin County of Superintendent A. Tyler here in the school board for coming up with what I think are reasonable measures to ensure children's safety as much as practical while also going ahead and opening schools back up. Our kids are going to, just as we are, whether we like it or not, have to learn to live with this reality that is COVID-19. Taking a year or two off of school while we and our scientists look for a vaccine is just not realistic. And we're going to have to get back to in-person brick-and-mortar schools. For those people that can, and those people who have children that work this way, my 7-year-old and 11-year-old are not these kids. I will go ahead and say that right now. Baldwin County in particular has a very robust virtual school. It is a public virtual school that it's been running for years. It's very successful. And I will tell you, their enrollment has tripled from the previous year, but they've got steps in place to handle that. And it's been cited. Senator Singleton the other day even talked about the virtual schools in Baldwin County and talked about the thermal imaging devices that Baldwin County is installing in its schools to check kids' temperatures as they walk by. We've done great things to get prepared for schools and to get back to school and back to some normality, if you will.
And that seems to be the template here is if you want to send your kids to school, if you want to send them to the brick and mortar school, and then that's an option. Or we'll offer the online virtual option as well, because for a lot of people, maybe you don't recognize this. I mean, this is their way of almost like a daycare or making sure their kids get fed. I mean, there's a lot of other things the school system does than just besides just you know the 4 hours or whatever.
You are absolutely right. I mean, I think about some of the stories I hear about what happens when our kids aren't in school. That is the stability for a lot of our children around the state. You know, some parents aren't great. They just aren't. And they don't give their kids the amount of attention that they need. And that's from all different socioeconomic groups. And I think that our schools play a vital function in helping our kids helping raise our kids, frankly. We'd like to think that parents do that, but our schools do an awful lot of that. Our teachers do an awful lot of that and make sure they're fed. They, you know, they help them with hygiene sometimes. I mean, there are some kids that really will be hurt if our schools are not open. And I think that anything that we can do to get kids back in the classroom is a good thing, provided that steps are taken to protect them as best we can. From this coronavirus. I mean, let's be clear. Nothing's perfect. We don't have all the answers. Anybody that tells you they do is wrong. And we've got to do the best we can, with a situation that is far less than perfect and is well beyond anyone's control.
And lastly, Senator, any discussions or any fears of another shutdown because of COVID-19? You know, people are talking, if this mask thing doesn't work and numbers continue to head in a bad place, Governor Ivey, Joe Bonner, her chief of staff, those folks would look at maybe rolling back some of these openings.
I don't see that happening. Now, the governor has kind of switched tacks on us a couple of times. The mask ordinance or mask mandate is a good example of that. But she has said that she did not think that there was a will in Alabama to do another shutdown. Scott Harris, Dr. Harris, has been on numerous national TV shows and radio shows and has said the same thing. The political will is not there. And I don't see that happening. I think we've done it. It was, frankly, unsuccessful. Here we are right now, right? We are seeing, you know, this gradual increase. The ability for us to shut down completely would be the only way to probably snuff out this virus. And we can't. We can't shut down completely for months on end. That won't work. It will cause irreparable economic harm, and we've already seen some of that. It will cause huge harm to our economy as a whole, and it's just not something that's even feasible. So I don't think it should be considered again. This thing's going to be around. We need to learn how to deal with it. Need to learn how to operate, how to, you know, wave at people instead of shaking hands. You know, let's understand that we need to do what we can to mitigate the spread, keep it under control, but also understand that this thing will be around for a while, and anything we do for 2 weeks or 4 weeks isn't going to fix it.
Senator, we got to leave it there, but I want to thank you for making time for us this afternoon.
Anytime. Appreciate the opportunity.
All right, folks. That was State Senator Chris Elliott, represents folks over there on the Eastern Shore. We got to take another brief time out. We will be right back. This is Midday Mobile on FM Talk 106.5.
You're listening to Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
And this is Jeff Poore filling in for Sean Sullivan on this Monday afternoon, 56 minutes after the hour. So to come on today's program, you get me in the next hour, former Congressman Parker Griffith, who represented the 5th Congressional District. He was Congressman before Mo Brooks. Mo Brooks, a frequent guest on this station. But we're going to talk national politics, or state politics on a national level, if you will. Last week's elections, what to make of that? A big win for Tommy Tuberville. 20 points, that's a sizable margin. Over in the 2nd Congressional District, the unlikelihood of a Barry Moore defeating a well-funded Jeff Coleman. So we'll get into those storylines, what that means for the rest of the state. So please stay tuned for that. I am hearing, despite what Senator Elliott just said, that there is some buzz about the possibility of a shutdown. There are businesses around the state in Alabama bracing for that possibility. They're worried about Governor Ivey rolling back the safe at home order and going back to the stay at home order, at least in some capacity. And here's the weird thing, guys. Just talking to some elected officials over the weekend, when Governor Ivey decided that mask order was on its way, she didn't notify the hierarchy in state government until 40 minutes before the announcement. And it leaked out around, and then at 11 o'clock that day, we knew everybody's got to start wearing a mask in public places in Alabama. But there are a lot of people, a lot of business owners that are getting ready. They think it's inevitable. I'm hoping they're wrong. But the unpredictability of the Ivey administration in this, there doesn't seem to be a blueprint, a plan in place. It seems to be kind of going as things move along. And I will say, for example, all of a sudden we have a mask order. This was not in the cards. Where did this come from? And it seems we're doing we're spitballing ideas. We're trying gestures here just to see if something will work. Anything will work and turn this trend around. And it becomes a question of, do we think that there is something government can do? Where do we draw the line of how much is enough and how much is too much? Where is that boundary? So we're going to have to, this is something we're going to have to work through. I don't think the public has an appetite to shut down, but a lot of people are worried about that prospect. We're going to take a timeout. We will return. This is FM Talk 106.5.